제바수르바야
옴
나모 바가바테 바수르바야
옴 나모 바가바테 바수르바야
Atagha
Namabhyapatan
Mahasuras Tesham Sukha Kridana Vikshanakshama Nityam Yad Antar Nija Jivitep Subhi Pitam Riter Apyamarai Pratikshyate Athaganama Vyapatan Mahasuras
Athaganama Mahasuras
Tesham Sukakridhana Vikshanakshama
Tesham Sukakridhana Vikshanakshama
Nityam Yadantar Nijajivi Jivitepshubhi
Nityam Yadantar Nijajivi
Itam riter apyamarai pratikshyate Athaghanama bhyapatan mahasuras Tesham sukha kridhana vikshanakshama
Tesham sukha vikshanakshama
Nityam yadantara nija jivitek shubhi
Nityam yadantara nija jivitek shubhi
Itam riter apyamarai pratikshyate
Itam riter apyamarai pratikshyate
Athaghanama vyapatan mahasuras
Athaghanama vyapatan mahasuras
Tesham sukha kridhana vikshanakshama
Tesham sukha kridhana vikshanakshama
Nityam yadantar nijadivitek shubhi
Nityam yadantar nijadivitek shubhi
Pitam riter apyamarai pratikshyate
Pitam riter apyamarai pratikshyate
Aghanama
A very powerful demon,
by the name Agha.
Abhyapatat
appeared on the spot.
Maha Asura,
a great, extremely powerful demon.
Tesham
of the cowherd boys.
Sukha Kridhana,
the enjoyment of the transcendental pastimes.
Vikshana Akshama,
being unable to see.
He could not tolerate the transcendental happiness
of the cowherd boys.
Nityam,
perpetually.
Yat Anta,
the end of the life of Agasura.
Nija Jivita,
Ipshubi,
just to live undisturbed
by Agasura.
Pita Amritai Api,
although they drank nectar.
Every day.
Amarai,
by such demigods.
Patikshyate,
was also being awaited.
The demigods were also awaiting
the death of the great demon Agasura.
Translation. My dear King Parikshit, thereafter there appeared a great demon named Aghasura,
whose death was being awaited even by the demigods. The demigods drank nectar every day, but still they feared this great demon and awaited his death. This demon could not tolerate the transcendental pleasure being enjoyed in the forest by the cowherd boys. Purport. One might ask how Krishna's pastimes could be interrupted by a demon. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur answers this question by saying that although the transcendental pleasure being enjoyed by the cowherd boys could not be stopped, unless they stopped the transcendental pleasure of their various activities, they could not eat their lunch. Therefore, at lunchtime, Agasura appeared by the arrangement of Yogamaya, so that for the time being, they would stop their activities and take lunch. Changing varieties are the mother of enjoyment. The cowherd boys would continuously play, then stop, and then again enjoy in a different way. Therefore, every day a demon would come and interrupt their sporting pastimes. The demon would be killed, and then the boys would engage again in the transcendental pastimes. So the demigods, they are awaiting this death of this demon. So the demon is a very powerful demon, a big demon, Agasura. Because only by his mystic city can he make himself as big as he will be described. Very big. I think he's 12 miles long or something. Quite big. So to be so powerful, then, and he had to be himself powerful. And he was powerful enough that the demigods themselves, they were afraid of him. And then being afraid then shows one thing, is that even though they're pious, even though they've gone to the heavenly planets, even though every day they're taking nectar so their lives are prolonged and they don't have to fear, but still they're afraid. So this shows that material arrangement, no matter how nice, how good, still fear is always there. This is the thing. The worry about future means one always has to make a plan. But the actual anxiety about the future, this is fear. And fear comes from ignorance. Ignorance means ignorance of our relationship with Krishna. We understand our eternal relationship with Krishna, our position as Krishna's servant. There's no fear because we know who we are. So you can't change that. Right? The cowherd boys, we'll see in this story, aren't afraid. They'll walk straight into the mouth of Agasura because they know Krishna's there. Krishna's going to take care of them. Well, there's nothing to fear, nothing to worry about. So then they're not worried because they know their relationship with Krishna will never be disturbed. So then there's no fear. So one of the principles of devotional life is to become fearless. Fearless means that one is fixed in one's identity as Krishna's servant. When that is there, there is no fear. Then one can do anything. Lord Maharaj could sit on the lap of his father, biggest demon, much bigger than Agasura, and very peacefully tell him about the qualities and the service to Lord Vishnu. Because he knows that his relationship with Krishna can't be disturbed. Maybe his relationship with his father can be disturbed, but not with Krishna. So then there's no problem. So this principle, then we see as fear is based on ignorance. Because ignorance means we think we are something else, something important. We're afraid of our money, we're afraid of this, we're afraid of that. Afraid for our life, because we think we are those things. I am my money, I am my body, I am my house, I am my, Pekingese dog, I am all these things. So if something goes wrong, then we're worried that then my identity as I have it now, something will be lost. Right? With death, of course, we lose the whole thing, but whatever it is that we have, that's part of my identity. I've either gotten it because of my identity, or having achieved it, it becomes part of my identity. Either way, it becomes part of me. So all my material identities, all my material attachments, all these things then become part of my how I identify, how I deal. So that is our conditioned nature. That is what we're having to deal with. That is what has to be crossed if we want to go from here to the transcendental realm. So we have to change that identity, that I am servant of Krishna. And servant of Krishna uses what's available in the spiritual world. They use what's available. What happens to be in season is what they cook. Whatever happens to be around is what they deal with. Right? That's what they engage. Whatever happens to be their particular form or relationship with Krishna, that activities, that paraphernalia, they engage in the Lord's service. All those things, and they deal with. So in the same way as we're here in the material world, then whatever we have, our body, our mind, our words, whatever we have, that's engaged in the Lord's service. It's the same principle. It doesn't change. There's the idea that sometimes that, well, here is one thing and there is another thing. No, it's the same thing. Because the consciousness is the same. Is that whatever you have within your sphere of influence, you use it in Krishna's service. So whatever is in the sphere of influence in the spiritual realm, it will also, that's what's used, not something else. Mother Yashoda uses what she has in her house, or what she can, through her good offices, get into her house. Right? She doesn't go out and her service to Krishna is not like the cowherd boys, you know, pretending to mock the swans or the monkeys or hopping like frogs. Or that's not her service to Krishna. Right? She doesn't do that. The cowherd boys, Krishna goes out, they run after him. I'll be the first to catch. Mother Yashoda stands there and waits for Krishna to come back. Different. So her sphere is different. So she will engage that sphere in the Lord's service. So if we're in the material world, then it's the same. Whatever is our sphere, that's what we engage in the Lord's service. That's perfection. Right? So we don't need to make that distinction. Distinction is only made on the platform of intelligence. But on the platform of rasa, there's no distinction. Right? If somebody is eating one thing and they are happy, and someone's eating another thing, they are happy, they're getting the same flavor. Right? The cow, when they're sitting in the field eating their grass and they're hungry, is the same as if you're hungry and sitting down and eating something that you like to eat. There won't be any difference in experience. There's the idea of, no, my experience is better because, you know, mine has been this and that. There's no difference. Once one devotee asked Prabhupada, I think they were in New York, so he says that, now you have here in New York these rich people living in these penthouse suites and all that, and they have themselves a dog, and the dog is, you know, wearing nice clothes and eats at the dinner table on fine china, you know, the best of, you know, whatever it is that you can arrange for the dog to eat. And then here in Mayapur, then, you know, the dogs are wandering wild, they have no place to live, and they're down at the side of the Ganges eating, you know, whatever dead floats up, you know, from the river. You know, so how is it one dog has such good karma, one has bad karma? Right? And Prabhupada said, to the dog, it doesn't matter. Dog couldn't care less. Right? To us, they look cute in their nice, you know, pink knitted sweater. But to the dog, they couldn't care less. Right? They already got fur, right? You have to shave the fur to put on the pink knitted sweater, right? You know, you can't put a sweater on a fluffy dog. You have to shave it. Right? So, Prabhupada said, they don't make any distinction. For the dog, it's just food. You know, it doesn't matter. So they have the tongue for this, so for them it's the same. So the point is, but for the principle of elevation, then we make the distinction, because intelligence is used for the purpose of liberation, to free us from the material energy. So then we distinguish between what's good, what's bad, what's higher, what's lower, like this. Then you take that, and then you get higher and higher till you get to out of the material world is better than being in the material world. Then out of the material world, better is to be in the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, then we can make distinction. That's only that we will endeavor for that the highest that is our nature. Right? Means if you tell someone from Vaikuntha about Goloka, then it's very nice, but as far as they'll go is Vaikuntha. They're not going to be interested to go farther. Right? But someone who could go to Goloka, then you have to point out the difference, because then they will keep going till they get there. But for someone from any from another realm, they're satisfied, they're happy. You know, it's nice to hear about the pastimes. They know the Lord likes those pastimes, so they like to sing about those pastimes. But their service is singing about those pastimes and talking about those pastimes because it pleases the Lord. Not that they want to be in those pastimes. It's different. So when you speak about higher principles, it's for those who can function at that higher level to get them there. And those who are going to function at a seemingly lower level, then they're already satisfied there. But they know that there's there, and then they know how everything interacts. So the intelligence is used for that. But as far as rasa goes, it doesn't matter. Like that. It's not that Lord Brahma is doing big, big service, so that's more pleasing than Mother Jashoda, you know, telling him it's time for him to stop playing and come take his meal. No. Mother Jashoda's service is more. Because why? Not because of the size of it. Because of the devotion. So the point is that someone who has ability to do big service, they should do big. Someone who has ability to not do big, they should do whatever they can. The main thing is the consciousness. So that means is whatever is our sphere of influence, if we're using that fully in Krishna's service, that's perfect. That's all that's asked. It's not that someone else is better or not. From our standpoint. Or from others' standpoint, like this. For ourselves, we'll always feel, yes, I'm not so important. So I'm doing whatever little I can. And others are doing such nice service. But if you're going to compare others to yours, you never think mine's better than theirs. Because it doesn't matter. So many times the Lord has shown such pastimes where Hanuman and the other monkeys are bringing great, big, huge tops of mountains. Right? You take a mountain and you'll see that up to a particular point, trees grow. Right? And then after that, it's just stone. So that's the top of a mountain. Right? So if you pick that off the top of the mountain and then bring that, it's not small. Right? Especially because many of them would go to the Himalayas to pick up mountain tops. So the trees there, I mean the tree line stops at about 16,000 feet and the mountains are about, you know, between 20 and 25,000 feet. So, you know, you have a couple of miles of mountain top there to pick up. So they pick those up and bring. So then, Hanuman was coming, and there was, in one description it was a spider, in one description it was a squirrel. And they're simply there kicking little bits of sand off the bank of the, I mean off the shore of the ocean, into the ocean. And then the monkey says, move out of the way. Don't you see I'm moving these big mountains, you're just kicking little sand. And Lord Ramachandra stopped him and said, in my eyes, they're both the same. He's doing his best, you're doing your best. If you kicked in sand, I would say you're doing nothing. Right? So, therefore, you can lift mountaintops. You have to lift mountaintops, otherwise you're not fully engaged. And someone who can only do a little bit, they're doing that, they're fully engaged. But the Lord sees that. He sees like that. So the point is that you always point out higher and higher, so that people will engage themselves to the maximum. That's the principle. If that is there in place, then it works. So, if one out of pride thinks my service is better, it may be the service may be considered better, but now is the quality of that service being performed any better? That's another thing. Because that's what is important to Krishna. Maybe someone's boiling the rice, someone else is cooking some fancy sabji, and so the person cooking the fancy preparation will think mine's better than the person who's just cooking the rice. But if it's not cooked in devotion, it's cooked with pride, Krishna would rather just eat plain rice than eat the person's sabji. Like that. So the principle, so that therefore we see is the principle is the same in the spiritual world or here, is that whatever is the sphere of your natural activities, that's what you perform. And if you do that, you'll be satisfied because the Lord will be satisfied. So then those who come from the spiritual world, they don't see any difference. Whatever is their position in the social structure here in the material world, whatever is their age, whatever is their ability, their influence, their wealth, another age, then they just act accordingly and perform service. And the Lord is satisfied. So they don't have to worry about doing someone else's service. That's why Krishna says, better do your own service than someone else's. So then one may ask, well, what would be the foundation of that? Because it looks unfair. Someone can do this, and someone can't do that, and someone else can do this, and like that. I could do this service also. But the point is it's a matter of rasa. Right? Why are services created? Why does one person have one service and another is another? Because of rasa. That's what it is. Why does the king do certain services and the artist does another? Because of the rasa. The king has one mood, the artist has another. They're both valuable, you need them both. And if they perform their service to the best of their ability, the whole structure works nicely. So then we can see is then you take that back to the spiritual realm. Mother Yashoda could also run through the fields and flap her arms and make noises like coquilles. It's not a difficult thing to do. You know, she may have even done it as a little girl. So it's not a difficult thing. But that's not her service to Krishna. She cooks for Krishna, she bathes Krishna, she dresses Krishna, she makes ornaments for Krishna. You know, she receives him when he comes home, she puts him to bed, she wakes him up. This is what she does for Krishna. So she could say, yeah, I could do whatever the cowherd boys would do. I'm also a pretty good dancer, I could go to the rasa dance. You know, but that's not the way it works. So there's rasa, and if you mix, it's called rasa bhas. So in the spiritual world, the problem there is only the rasa bhas. You stick within your rasa, then the rasa is pure. Then Krishna gets the taste he's looking for. Right? You know, it's like that. It means you could put a nice South Indian coconut chutney, you know, in the middle of all of it. It's physically possible. You know? But it doesn't mean it's the best match. Right? It's not the best match. Or you could, you know, put the halva inside the lemon juice, you know, and mix it up, make a nice slush. You know, I mean, so many things you could do. You know, we could take the halva and throw it up and stick it on the ceiling. If you really want to have fun, you turn on the fan. Then when you throw it up, it'll go on the walls also. So many, it's unlimited things you could do. But it's a matter of those things that could be done, which of those please Krishna? And why do they please Krishna? Because then the rasa is pure. It matches the nature. Right? The forms in the spiritual world are manifest to fit the rasa. So because of the particular rasa, they manifest that form. Right? So that's the thing. You know, if Mother Yashoda was, you know, 2 feet high, you know, then, you know, she could still be a mother, she could still have the attitude of a mother, but you know, if the sun is twice as big as her, it doesn't quite match the rasa. Therefore, Mother Yashoda is bigger than Krishna. Right? So, therefore, the form matches function. Right? So here, the form matches the rasa. Because function is rasa. The whole purpose of everything is just the rasa. So then, yeah. So that's the thing, is then we see, okay, what is my sphere? And use that in Krishna's service. Krishna is satisfied. Then everything functions. There's no need of going into other realms. It functions very, very well. So we see here is, the if that's understood, one is peaceful, one is satisfied, one is not in anxiety. The cowherd boys aren't in anxiety. But the demigods, they're in anxiety. Even though they have everything. They have the best weapons in the universe. They're living in the best place in the universe. They have the best intelligence, the best beauty, knowledge, fame, wealth, influence. Whatever it is, they have the best. They manage the universe. But they're not satisfied. Why? Because they're always afraid of losing it. Right? So if you're afraid of losing it, it means it's not yours. You can't lose something that's yours. So their attachment is there, but it's more for their side. It's not for Krishna. So because of this, then they are in anxiety. So they are unable to appreciate. So they're waiting. And because they are servants of Krishna, they're devotees of Krishna, Krishna fulfills their desires. They have desire for position, fame, wealth, all these things. Krishna gives it to them. Of course, he runs them through a little bit of rough patches now and again, so they'll appreciate it. But the others, it's not necessary. Like that. It means the demigods, Krishna makes some trouble, or allows trouble to happen, then they remember him. Otherwise, they don't remember him. And for the devotees who are already remembering him, then they go deeper in the relationship. So in any case, they all turn to Krishna. So another point, then the main point made here by Srila Prabhupada is that how could the demons interrupt the pastimes? Because factually you're dealing on the transcendental platform, so you shouldn't be able to disrupt them. So the destruction is only there or created simply for the purpose of understanding, simply for the purpose of facilitating the pastimes. That's actually what it's for. Is that the cowherd boys' pastimes, they could do what they're doing eternally. Jumping around and having a good time and playing all these games. But the problem is part of the pastime is variety. So there must be variety. Each one of the things they could do eternally. But variety then makes it nice. Therefore, then Krishna arranges through Yoga Maya that all these demons and other disturbances come so that they stop the pastimes. Something happens that's unique. Then they sit down and take their lunch and then they go back to play. So Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, then he brings this out. This is the actual thing. Because they're not. That you can see them both in one place, that is the effect. The Yoga Maya is able to do that. Because the Tathasta Shakti means that you can have the spiritual energy and the material energy functioning at the same spot at the same moment. That's the potency of the Tathasta Shakti. Otherwise, in the spiritual realm, you only have the spiritual. Material realm, you only have material. But in the realm of Tathasta, you have both happening at once. This is the uniqueness. So therefore you can have demons, which are material, walking into Vrindavan, which is completely spiritual, because of the influence of Ittatasta Shakti. So that is then controlled here by Yoga Maya, and she allows these things to happen. So it happens in this way. One, it fulfills the desires of the demigods and that the demon gets killed. Two, it makes a break for lunch. And three, it creates variety. So all these different things then are happening here. Another point we see is the demon could not tolerate the transcendental pleasure being enjoyed by the cowherd boys. This is always a thing. Someone who is not in line with Krishna can't tolerate somebody who is. It's a common principle. A wild animal cannot tolerate a tame animal of the same species. They won't like. Means if you have tame elephants that are carrying, cargo in a caravan, and wild elephants that are moving through the forest come across them, then they'll try to kill them. Because for them, anything tame, anything wild doesn't appreciate anything tame. It's just the way it works. So here you have people who are surrendered to Krishna and enjoying transcendental bliss. So the demons can't tolerate that. That how they're happy, one is that as demons only they should be happy. It's just a mundane thing. They become envious or jealous. The other is that they feel that why Krishna? Why it should be in connection with Krishna? Why that way? I will be happy in my own way. How I want to be happy, I should be happy. But they're not happy. So then they become unhappy seeing that other people are happy doing something they wouldn't want to do. Right? The cowherd boys are surrendered to serving Krishna. The demons don't want to surrender to Krishna. Therefore, then the demons get upset that how is it they can become happy doing something that I don't want, couldn't do. So it's a common principle. Is something that we don't like to do, we can't understand how someone else can be happy doing it. Therefore, the importance of the culture, like in the Vedic culture, then there's the unity and variety. As we know that one person prefers this, and they're happy doing that. And someone else prefers doing that, they're happy doing that. And so, but it's part of the whole picture. It's part of the whole Lord's whole body. So then it functions. So then there's no difficulty. You know, it's just like, who wants to sit there all day dealing with diplomacy, right? But those who deal in that administrative field, for them it's just the normal day-to-day life. You know, and for the artists, then they want to be able to express themselves and these things. So then naturally, then someone else may say, well, why would you be doing that? We could be studying. You know, and someone else said, why would we want to study all day when we can be practically applying it and getting some profit out of it? Someone else said, why would you be going for profit, you know, more than what you need? Why not just live simply? So like this, each member of the society could be finding a fault in the other. But if we understand this, you need the whole thing to make the whole thing work, then there's no problem. So that is culture. It's when we are trained, we understand is that there's different aspects needed in the whole social body, and that whoever's satisfied, wherever they are, then they are in that position, they are happy. So that's needed. Then there's no problem. It's not that everything works in one way. Communists tried it, it didn't work. And they didn't even purely do it. Right? What is it? Communism? How does it go? Their Mahavakya is everyone according to their need. That's one of this. But I'm thinking everyone according to their need, everyone according to their ability or something. From each according to their ability, to each according to their need. So it sounds great, but then in that is built in, someone has to decide what is their ability that they're going to put out and what is their need that they're going to be put in. Therefore, even though they say classless, right there they've already created two. The people and the persons deciding. So therefore they had the mass, what are they called? That's the proletariat, and then you had the guys that managed it in the Kremlin, the guys in the black limousines, right? So then, automatically, it's two, but it didn't work, you know? Or you try to cut out something, they cut out that the kings do something stupid, they cut out the kings, and they end up with a mess. There's Brahmins do something stupid, they cut out them. Everyone tries to cut out, you have to have the whole body. Otherwise, it doesn't work. That's the whole thing. The whole Varnashram system is scientific. So the whole thing's there. The whole thing works. So this is one of the narrow-minded mentalities, is that our particular spot is important and others are not. Because each one could say that they're important. Like that. But it depends upon what your goal is. So therefore, each one is important. Without the feet, the society doesn't move like that. Without administration, it's not going to be organized. Without education, it's not going to know where it's going. You know, without money, it's not going to happen. So everything is important. But now, so therefore, as a body, all four have to be there. But if you want to make a distinction, then you can see is, okay, then where do you start? It means the person's only going to be able to administrate or do economics or do work unless if they're educated. Right? So that has to be first in place. Then without administration, it'll be crazy. All the dacoits, this and that, unscrupulous people will just make a mess. So administration has to be there. When administration's there, then there's economics. Then with economics, then you can pay everybody. Therefore, in the social structure, it's put like that. And for the spiritual, then spiritual knowledge, how to perform all the other activities is more important. So according to their detachment, then it's considered better. Why detachment? Because getting out of the material world is a basic part of the goal. We want to go to the spiritual world. Therefore, going up has to be there. You don't only want to go to Brahman, still you have to go up. And if you only want to go to the heavenly planet, still you have to go up. And even if you want to make it here on this plane, still you're trying to move up. Right? Move up in the company, move up in this. So that principle is that. And what is it? It's Buddha, more detachment. Right? The kid's less detached, the mother's more detached. Right? She has to sacrifice for the children, so she's more detached. therefore she's senior. Right? So the whole thing, it all works like that. The king has to be detached. One may say, oh, he has so much opulence, so much this and that. But at 50, what happens to all that opulence? Right? It's left right where it's sitting. And he walks off to the forest in birch bark. Right? Not from the palace. When they leave the palace, nothing goes from the palace. They even bring clothes from the forest, put that on, and leave the palace. Right? So we see there's more detachment. Right? So, and then the business, yes, he's detached. He sits in the corner, you know, looking at his Gita, chanting his rounds. Like that, you know, he's got one eye on the Gita and one eye on the transaction that his son is doing to see if he did it right. Like that. And the artist, he does until the end. He does his art and trains the others, and he's the senior artist and all that. So we see as you go down, the detachment is less. So that's the standard that makes them do. One is for social, how you say, administration and functioning, then you make a distinction. And the other, more higher, is for getting out of the material world. So then that is made. So based on that, but otherwise, as far as running, all parts have to be there. Otherwise it won't function. So then we see is, for that reason, that Krishna wants all aspects to be there. And whoever is in whichever position, whatever they do for Krishna, Krishna is satisfied. Any questions on this? Or comments? Or?
Yeah. They live in that many years. They think it's not necessary to go to Mongolia, I think.
It's not important to go to Mongolia.
It's not necessary. Because when you are one should liberate.
When you are which?
When you are one should free or liberate.
Yeah, when you're liberated.
Yeah. You don't need to know that thing because you are all the time in this arena.
Uh-huh.
You don't need to know that thing, thank you for nothing because all the time you are thinking in Krishna.
Uh-huh.
And you don't need to go to the temple. You are all the time in service or in thinking.
If you're liberated, you don't have to go to the temple among gods because you're liberated. Yeah, that's true. But along with that means you don't need your house, you don't need your wife, and you don't need her to cook for you, and you don't need sex with your wife either. So it's a package deal. Like that means if you don't go to Mangalarki, great. You don't have to, then you live under a tree. You know. So if you're thinking 24 hours, it means you're thinking 24 hours. This is just cheating. They just say you don't have to. Point is, but what are they doing means if they're not there, they would be in Mangalarki in the spiritual world. The reason a liberated person doesn't have to follow any of the rules here is they're following all the activities in the spiritual world. Understand? Someone who's liberated then is on the platform, means as Vaishnavas, is on the platform of Surup Siddhi. Means they have this spiritual form. Right? Means the two go together. You know? It's just like the lightning and the sound, they go together. It's just a moment's difference. So you're liberated and you're having your spiritual form. They go together. Right? So in that spiritual form, then they're taking part in the 24-hour pastimes of the Lord. Right? So that's there.
This is possible in this world?
You can be here and there at the same time. So But otherwise, they're not. If they just stay or liberate, then why are they coming to temple and managing? Or why are they coming and getting a paycheck? Because a liberated person doesn't need a paycheck either. Doesn't need a position. Doesn't need a desk. Doesn't need an office. But they say, oh, it's service, so is Mangalarti. What I'm saying is that if they're going to act as a madhyama, then they act as a madhyama. If they're going to act as an uttama, they act as an uttama. They don't pick and choose. You know, they don't pick and choose. Okay, I like the Mahaprasad part of this lila. You know, I like the comfortable bed. You know, I like sleep with my wife. These are okay services for Krishna. Oh, you know, but these other things, Mangalarti, chanting, japa, you know, these kind of things. We're above these. It doesn't work like that because it's so obvious, it's so blatant that it's just mundane conception. It's obvious. It's not otherwise. Because you'll see it's consistent that way. People who are always at Mangalarti and this and that, you don't generally see them giving up on another side. Right? It's the ones that don't, they're the ones that are saying. The ones that are below the standard, they're the ones talking liberation. Those who are living the life of someone who is liberated, they're not talking this. So it's a standard disease. It's very easily identified, you know. Like when somebody coughs and they have a blocked nose, you know, they got a cold. So when they say these things, you know that's just mundane. They're materialists, that's all. It's a materialistic concept. Like that. It's a neophyte. They're neophytes. They're not beyond that. So when a neophyte claims to be liberated, that's cheap. Like that. That's if they're claiming it personally. Right? If someone is trying to explain someone else's position, that's another thing. You have to look at that differently. You know what I'm saying? Like you have somebody, maybe they're not well, or this or that, and they are not attending all the things. And someone else may explain when they're very advanced, they're always like this and that. That's another thing. But if they're explaining it about themselves, then that's not good. You won't find that. Because the liberated person will just say that I'm, you know, fallen. And I'm a neophyte, so that's why I have all these troubles. Does that make sense? Means when it's like this. The day you find that your spiritual master or one of Krishna's eternal servants comes up to you and takes your hand, and then you notice that your form happens to be a little different than now, you know, and takes you around and starts engaging with services in the spiritual world, right? You know, from what descriptions you've heard from Bhagavatam and all that. At that point, then you don't have to worry about following anything here. But that means you don't eat either. You don't sleep. You don't do anything. You just wander around like a madman. Because you don't notice what's going on here. If you notice, you have to follow the rule. Right? You understand? Sukadeva Goswami is running naked down the road and runs across a bunch of naked girls, but he doesn't identify them as such, so he just keeps running. Right? They identify that he is a saintly person. They offer their respects. Vyasadeva comes along because he's writing the Vedas. He's teaching everyone how to discriminate. Therefore, he discriminates. Here's a bunch of naked girls. Right? Therefore, he deals with them as girls. He doesn't deal with them, ignore them, or deal with them as trees. So if you can discriminate that it's there, then you have to deal with it according to the discrimination that's given to it by the Lord. If you don't notice, it doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying? That's the difference. So that's how you can tell is when they're, the greater the purity, the less the lines of division. And the less the purity, the more the greater the distance is. Does that make sense? So these are fine points.
Yes. Actually, a couple of Sanskrit scholars told me that Varna Sankara. I felt that we usually translate it as unwanted progeny. Uh-huh. They said another translation is mixed caste.
Mixed caste, yeah.
And that in, as we know in Kali Yuga, practically every birth is Varna Sankara. So I would say that this would be a substantial impediment to the implementation of Vanashram, you know, that it's difficult for people to understand what their partner.
Yeah. I mean, is it the, yeah. Do you get all here? I don't understand. But they're saying about that Varna Shankara. Prabhupada is saying it's unwanted population, some translate it as mixed, but mixed is unwanted. That's the meaning of it. You want pure, it's just like, let us say you're dealing in horses, you want a thoroughbred. If it's mixed, it's not wanted because it will act differently. You know, the thoroughbred, you can use it in one way, the mixed, you have to use it in a different way. You know, so that's the thing, is that when you mix, that's what's unwanted, because then they carry two natures, or three natures, or more natures, depending on how, the more they're mixed, the more wild it gets. So that's why the fundamental principle in the Vedas of marriage is like nature. If there's any one thing said over and over again is like nature persons have to marry each other. If they're different, it means, therefore they don't consider what the body looks like. It's considered, do they have the same nature? If they have the same nature, then it will work. Then the child will have the same nature. Otherwise, if not, if the man and woman are different, then the child will be of those two mix. Like that. So that's the science. So then the child doesn't know which way they should go. You know, they don't know if they're Arthur or Martha, right? Like that. They can't figure out what is their position. You know? So that is the difficulty. So then if you're going to establish pure Varna, that's why the pure Varna Ashram as the system for upliftment is not viable in the Kali Yuga. You can use it in the other three, but not in the Kali Yuga. In the Kali Yuga, you use it as a social system, but not as the main means of upliftment. So for us, then the main means of upliftment is engagement in devotional service. So we happen, because we have social needs, we engage those social needs in the Lord's service. That means we use Varna Ashram in the Lord's service. But it's not the Varna Ashram itself that's going to elevate us, because unless you're from a purebred family, we don't have the genes to do it. Because they just automatically are like that. Like you take a purebred, you know, Indian business community, they just think business. It's everything, that it's just business. They can see profit in everything. You know, and they have full faith. I can give away everything I have and I'll get it all back. Like that. I've seen it myself. Like that. Business person was here, set things up, decided to move from here. You know, there was a discussion, you know, whether they should sell it, how much this and that. And then the discussion was coming, why don't you just give it to the temple? They gave it to the temple. No problem. It wasn't even like an anxiety. They just gave it. Like that. And because they know, full faith, that whatever I give is coming back. And if I give to the temple, it's coming back unlimited. So they have no problem like this. So it's pure genes. So they have no problem with it. You know, Kshatriya, they're just pure. It's just, no, it has to be according to noble things. Can't be not according to law. I had my desires, but if it's not in line with law, it can't work. Profit's not enough. Like that. The problem is, unless it's proper knowledge, unless it's in line with the proper siddhanta, it's not enough. Right? The Kshatriya is like, it may be according to the law, but it may be we've missed the siddhanta. They may sometimes miss that. That's why they keep Brahmins. Because law, there's so many. For the karmis, for the jnanis, for the yogis, for the devotees, like that. So you could interpret it in many ways. Someone's done something wrong, then you give a particular atonement for that. But as devotees, it changes. Like that. So therefore, then they need Brahmins, because they'll say, no, this is the law. Yeah, but it's the law, but you have to interpret it according to this. So then, naturally, these things are there. Very easily, you can bring it out. But even if it's not there, because we're devotees, we're following the fast path. See, the non-devotees are following the slow path, so they can only function within their sphere. They are bound to the modes of nature. That's all they can function within. So that's why the varnashram as the principal thing of elevation can't be used, because they don't have the inborn nature to do that. But in devotional service, you're doing the fast path. You're taking what they would do by the slow path in millions of births, we're doing it in one. Therefore, we have to lean on intelligence. Because from our natural sentiment, it's not going to work. From our senses, it's not going to work. Our senses are impure, the mind's impure. Right? Then, but by intelligence, we can get it to work. Right? It says that a bad activity performed in the body comes in the body, in the words comes in the word, and the mind comes in the mind. If you perform something in the mode of physical offenses, then you'll also take birth in lower birth, you know, animal birth. Others you'll take birth in, you know, problems, and mental offenses you'll take low birth. Right? So generally, anything out of purebred families is considered low bred. Like that. So that means there's mental offenses. So that means the mind is not what's pure. So therefore the senses aren't going to be pure. So, but intelligence, that you can approach it. Therefore Krishna in the Gita is talking Bhuti Yoga. It means the yoga of intelligence. From intelligence, then we establish our identity, then we establish the values of our mind. So even though one doesn't have the natural inborn ability of the varnashram, one can function within it through intelligence. So if intelligence and logic is used, anyone can situate themselves. Like that. They just have to know, okay, what are the duties, why? Right? Because intelligence wants to know why. And once it's there and it's explained, then the mind will accept it. Because you're having to accept something new. And many times the things in the Vedic culture work opposite of what seemingly works in the modern. You know, there's just a completely different system. You know. So like that, that's why Krishna then is advising to Arjuna that this is the better system. Then it's not a matter, because a devotee already has the fundamental consciousness of a Brahman by accepting the goal of life as Brahman. Right? So, and of Brahman, they're accepting Parabrahman. So that puts them fundamentally in consciousness as a Brahman. But their conditioned nature, their sphere of influence, will be according to the four. So then, with a Brahminical consciousness, they look at what is their nature and decide, okay, which of the four as an occupation, how am I going to make my money, am I going to function? But as far as ashram, there's only Brahminical. Like that. The Vedas only describe the Brahminical ashram. They don't describe a Kshatriya ashram, a Vaishya ashram, no. They just describe Brahminical ashram. Because for Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, their value system and lifestyle is the same. But for occupation, there's a difference. Right? The Kshatriya lives off of protection, the Brahman off of teaching, and the Vaishya off of, you know, trade, cow protection. But there's economics. So that works. Then the Shudras, they're assisting the Dvijas, so naturally they live the lifestyle they live. And they assist them in the occupation that they're doing. So that means whoever they're working with, they function there. So they don't have to separately endeavor. So then, with this understanding, then it can function very nicely. You know, it's simplistic, but that's where you have to start. If that's understood, then you can get into the detail. If this can't be grasped, then the detail won't be able to be grasped. So therefore, you just see what is the major inclination one has, and cultivate that. Like that. Because all it is something to keep you busy until you go back to Godhead. We're not using it that it itself is going to create the perfection. We're using it as a means within a bigger sphere of circle of perfection, means devotional service. And within devotional service, we're engaging varnashram, just like we're engaging pancharatra. Like that. So that's the fundamental. So But understanding that of the background, then it gives rise to being humble. And that humility is very advantageous for devotional service. It's like the key of the whole, making the whole thing work. Humility is there, then the brain works properly. When one is proud, the brain somehow never doesn't work right. So if one's humble, then the brain is the sharpest. Then Buddha Yoga works. But if one's proud, then we will make a mistake. You know, like that. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. So, you know, like, particularly in the beginning, when we felt that it was like really unique. Yeah. It seems like, you know, the intelligence that you described, we should employ to situate ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be a big factor, you know, how pleasing we can be to the Parampara. Because I think that analyzing nature's the way to do that, no matter how many devotees they see, well, I do a lot of different things. There's sometimes a pretty big mix.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and sometimes it's equally distributed in different environments. Then there's a lot of discretion that has to be employed. Mm-hmm. It can be a little nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
Because it's not a cut and dry thing, like you're born in a pure Vaisya Kshatriya around the family, that doesn't really exist so much in Kalpuga.
It does in India. But you don't see it here. It means those families you won't hear about. You won't see them on the street. They're there, but you don't see them. But so it's important you have to use the intelligence to discriminate. But I just have to see what's practical. But the thing is one always has to understand is that if one is whatever one works at for the occupation that doesn't disturb the ashram. This is the thing. There's this idea that there is a Kshatriya ashram, there's a Vaishya ashram, there's a Shudra ashram. It doesn't exist such a thing. That's just a made-up thing by Western devotees. Therefore, they say there's Kshatriya culture, there's Vaishya culture. Why all this Brahminical culture? Why do we have to do this? We don't fit in. No, that is a statement by a Shudra. Like that. Kshatriya would never say that. Brahma would never say that. Vaishya knows it's not profitable to say that. So only a Shudra could say that. Because Vaishya knows piety is money. Impiety means loss. So they're not stupid. They're practical. The Kshatriya is the same thing, but it has to be noble. So if it's the choice between making a profit and nobility, he'll take the nobility, you know, and the Vaishya will be laughing, you know, look at this goof, you know, he lost everything, you know, and we're sitting pretty, you know, all for his prestige, like that. And the Brahmin, if it's against knowledge, won't go for it. So you have to see so that's only an occupation, but the ashram, it's the same standards. The same principles are said, the same, because everybody still eats with their right hand, and they still, you know, wash their mouth after they eat, and they still, you know, all these same standards are there for everybody, that they're non-violent, they're truthful, they're honest, they're hard-working, they're not lazy, they're all these same standards. Means a good Shudra has to be loyal, has to be honest, like that, has to be respectful, has to be intelligent, has to be a good worker. Otherwise, how will we get anything done? Nowadays, companies don't function because they have bad shooters. You have a good shooter, they work so great. You know, that they, because for them, it's that their purpose is the same as the head of the companies. Right? It means chastity is a principle that applies to devotees, brahmacharis, women, and shooters. It means those four principles of chastity all these groups have to have. Otherwise it doesn't function. It means they have to serve who is senior to them. They have to be well-wishing of who's senior to them. They have to be well-wishing towards the associates of those senior to them, and have to have the same vow. So as a brahmachari, if you don't have that towards the spiritual master, you don't learn. A devotee doesn't have that towards the Lord and the spiritual master, they don't advance. Women don't have that towards the husband, it doesn't work. The shooter doesn't have that towards who they're working under, it doesn't work. So the fundamental principles that just make it work. And these are very noble qualities. You know, you have to be very sense-controlled in others to be able to function on that platform. So there, you see, like Narad Muni mentions 30 qualities that is proper for the human society to have. That's where everybody has. Then they're specific for Brahmacharya and Vaishnavas. Manu mentions 10, because he's not dealing with specifically Vaishnava community. So he mentions 10 qualities everybody has to have. Then, besides that, then some specialize in knowledge, some in protection, and some in economics. So we generally tend to take it that Brahmins start here, and then you go down, and then, you know, on the bottom of the barrel is the shooters. No, the actual technique is you start, what's human life? Then you go, okay, who are the leaders of that? Who are the leaders in economics? Who are the leaders in administration? Who are the leaders in knowledge? Because the society must be led. So they start with the common person is the fundamental platform that everybody has to work from. Generally, we take it, Brahminical is the platform, and everyone's below that. No, it's Shudra is the platform, and then Brahmin, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas are above that. So that's why I'm saying is that sometimes that's why intelligence we have to approach it, because the Western way of approaching it sometimes is backwards to the Vedic. Because it's a descending process. So if it descends, it means it's above us. So that means Shudra is above. We have to attain to, you know, Shudra-dham. Then we can get to the others. Like that. While we're looking at it, we're on the ascending, so naturally we're on the top of the pile, so everything's below us. So that's the difference actually between the pious and impious mentality. So it's like that. So it's quite simple in one way. The main thing that gets in the way is the ego. You know? Because I've seen for kids, it doesn't matter. Like that, even as a kid, you're a Brahmin. Some will say yes, some will say no. They have no problem that they're not someone else's. Because for them it's that, you know, I'm a Kshatriya. They like the marshmallow, they like all those things. They sit there reading all day, you know, the things like Arthashastra and other things like that, the Dhanavedi, this, that. They sit there all day, you know, trying to figure out how to make their bow and how to make this and how to make that. They're happy. Like that, you know. The other boys want to do other things. Them it's not, it's the adults, because it's a prestige issue. But actually it's not a matter of prestige. It's a matter of administration. Means the man working in the company has to listen to the boss, otherwise the company won't work. The man running the company has to listen to the person running the country, otherwise the country won't work. The person running the country has to listen to the person who knows the Vedic knowledge, otherwise the country won't work. So it's just a hierarchy for social function. But as far as devotional, it doesn't matter. That it doesn't matter. You know?
So what are we as a community putting in the gift and taking the voice of the child and then the energy?
Why they're not?
Are they?
It's in the structure that there is, means on the structures that they have a Brahminical council and these that, and that's supposed to function. But it's basically operated by directors. Brahminical council is an office that the director can access and call. If it's something Shastra, yes. That's what they're supposed to. Whether it's functioning, I don't know. I haven't been involved for a while. That maybe Pankajoni could say. But it's there in theory. Because the Mayapur management structure is set up on the structure given by Bhishmadev. Bhishmadev said how to set up the structure. So therefore you have it. So MAC is a wing that is assisted directors. The Brahminical Council is there. There's a lower council. There's a divisional head. That's below that such structure, like that. So it's all based on that. It's just a matter that the thing, to make it work, you have to have directors that sit here. Otherwise you can't operate these. And then it just leaves it with the Mac on it. So then they have to do the best. That's another thing. This is not the forum for that. But the main principle is that you know, we should take guidance from the scriptures and this and that. But it has to hit the ground. That's the thing. Bhishma Dev says that the administrators will take advice from Brahmins who know the administrator shastras and can make it practical. So it's not just any Brahmin they'll take advice from. If it's something with philosophy, then someone who knows philosophy. But if it's administration, then it has to be Brahmins who know the shastric aspect of administration and can give them practical ways to apply it. So it's not just any Brahmin. You know? Yeah. Within the Brahminical, there's also so much variety of Brahmins. You know, those who work with the kings, those who work with the temples, those who work with the preachers, you know, those who work with the arts, so it means the sciences, it's very broad. Like that. You have the most variety of basically of Brahmins and Shudras. Like that. Kshatriyas, I think, there's four main ones. Those who conquer, go out and conquer, those who run a nice kingdom and develop it and enhance it and cultivate the arts, the other two I don't remember. In Vaishyas, basically you have those in trade, those in cow protection, cultivation, and money lending, like that. So they have their connections, but it's like those are the main branches. So the Brahmins also then have major branches, Shudras, you know, fine arts, mechanical arts, unskilled labor, you know, and then everybody has their divisions.
Thank you, Master. I was thinking about the modern social philosophy, which is real, in order to attract an answer. Now, our social philosophy, based on good regulation, the antithesis of modern philosophy. Now, my practical question is, we have seen the practice. Nowadays, our society, our practical field. But there is been a sort of direct need to change relative to the technology of freedom and liberty. This concept of
equity and fraternity.
And our mentality, our youth, mindset, and everything. My practical question is, though, we want to be Christian conscious. We have tests that there is actually really a happy relationship. But how can our past turbulence bring on?
It means the modern cultural concept. It's intelligence. Because the modern things, like you said, they're done to get the mass. Mass works on sentiment, it doesn't work on intelligence. So if they worked on intelligence, they would have figured out modern advertising a long time ago. You know, the guy sits there with the cigarette, the fancy suit, leaning on a Rolls Royce there and looks really cool. Somehow or another, you think it's either the car, the suit, or the cigarette. It's none of them. This guy got $1,000 to take that picture, and then he walks off and goes back to his hotel. You know, so it's the principle is by intelligence then we know, because nothing functions without regulation. You know, because if it's actual freedom, then that means people could follow regulation and they should be allowed to be free. But just as those who follow regulation complain about those who don't, people who don't follow regulation complain about people who do. So if freedom is actual practical freedom, that means people could do what they want. So if somebody wanted to be Krishna conscious, wanted to be strict, and wanted to follow the culture, they would be allowed. So we see is that the modern concept of freedom is just as biased and bigoted as the other side. That's the meaning of Niyamagraha. Niyamagraha has two wings to it. One is the person, without really understanding what is the purpose of the activity, throws the activity out because it's not them. Right? Then the other side is those who are pious enough to accept the Vedic, you know, standards or social standards, whatever it may be. Then, but they don't understand why. So it's sentimental for them also. But at least it's a pious sentiment. Though it's a proud pious sentiment. So then they are, on anyone's case, who is not following. But their following it will only give them pious results. It's not going to give them full spiritual results because they're not seeing it actually spiritually. Right? And the other side sees it self-centered, me, I'm important. So it's just their mind. So they're not going to get anywhere either. So the razor's edge is in the middle. That's why you have to turn to Krishna, because you don't know what you're pulling from this side and what you're pulling from that side. It's not a matter of pull both of them to the middle. It's a matter of this comes to the middle and that comes to the middle. Because both of them find something that's correct. You know what I'm saying? That's why you can have two parties, because both of them find something that's correct and find something that works. So it doesn't work completely. So it works, they're strong. And what doesn't work, they make up a philosophy to fill in the gap. Right? Like the karmis, they have a thing. Piety works for them. They get their wealth, they get their positions, they get their this, but they don't get satisfaction. So then they work in some philosophy about that. The jnanis, then they have some sad, but they don't get the sadhu, so they work in their philosophy. But bhakti's in the middle. So therefore, we have from both sides. Both are correct, but only in the areas that has actually been set by Krishna. Therefore, the middle is what Krishna says. That's why those in the middle can work with both sides. You know, dhira, dhira, janapriyo, dhira. Means they can move with the ones who were properly situated and those who were the dacoits. Because they knew Krishna's path. So, means what is the dacoit? Why is he doing it? He always can say he's maintaining his family, he's doing this and that. So you can appreciate all those same sentiments that the pious person. But because it's impious, therefore he's going to have all these anxieties, the police and this, and nobody likes him, and this and that. So therefore, then you can work on him. You can start from where he is. Because he's trying to maintain his family. His method is wrong. And the other person is trying to maintain their family. They're using the right method, so these guys are right on this side. And he's right on that side. So that's the thing, is the middle is not where you bring the two together. That's why every attempt in the world, from the international to the national to the local to the family level, where they try to compromise, doesn't work. Compromise never works. What works is figuring out, okay, the pendulum's over there, just bring it to the middle. It's not that it's over there, swing it to the other side. It's no better. You know? I mean, whether the farmer is exploiting the animals or the pigs are exploiting the animals, it doesn't make any difference to the animals. It's the same exploitation. You know? So that's the principle. The pendulum swing doesn't work. It sounds great, but it's sentiment. It's not intelligence. So the difficulty is that if we want to conquer, we have to use intelligence. That's the main thing. So if we use intelligence, then we look at, well, anyway, you know, then, okay, we say, okay, Calcutta is not working so great. Mystical, but not so great. How it even works at all, that's a mystical, you know, kind of like, you could probably do a PhD on how Calcutta functions. You know, it's so unique. And then we'll say, okay, you go to the west somewhere, it works very nicely. You know? So then, but why is it working there? Right? The same devotee who will say freedom, liberty, equity, fraternity, all these things like that, is also going to probably say is things work much better in the West than they do here. Okay? And that's sentiment. Why? Because I'm from the West. That's why. That's why it's important. But if you actually look, no, why does it work? It means it's still working even if we're here. Right? It's not like a Buddhistic philosophy. When I leave Germany and I come here, then Berlin stops working. No, Berlin still works. Okay, now why is it working? Because there's strict rules. There's a line down the middle of the pavement. You don't cross that line. You do, everyone's going to honk at you and get in your case and the police is going to catch you. It's 100 euros. You don't have your seatbelt on, it's 100 euros. You know? You have to drive that side of the street. You have to stop at the light. You have to. So we see the more regulated it is, the better it is. That's intelligence. But then we see when we try to apply that in our life, we drop the intelligence and fall back to sentiment. Therefore, no social structure. Because everybody's sentiment's different. So unless you have a common sentiment, how are they all going to work together? So that common sentiment's Krishna's sentiment. then it'll work. So that's where Prabhupada says the regulative, and Krishna says the regulative principles of freedom. Regulation is freedom. Right? We always get the thing is, we don't smoke, so the guys that smoke, oh, you're not free, you can't smoke. We're free, you can smoke. I'll lay a bet, $100 on the table. Okay, 6 months, you don't smoke. One more cigarette. Let's see. No chance. No way. No way. They're not free. They're bound. They have to smoke. We could, if we want, but we've decided not to, because we know the effects, so we're not going to do it. So this is the thing. Irreligion is seen as religion. Religion is seen as irreligion. Krishna says in the Gita. Problem is we don't study our own books. Kali, yes. Gita, no. Sorry, what is it? Grantaraj Shrimad Bhagavatam.